Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Dave, have you very much.
Hello and welcome to Do Go On. My name is Dave. If you just heard of the brand new theme song there, you are listening to a podcast with myself. I am Dave Warnocky. I'm here with Jess Perkins, one of the lovely singers we just heard from. Hello, Jess.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I am very good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty good. And you, Matt, over there. How are you? We're also here with you.
Oh, mate. Don't even get me started about how good I am.
Oh, Matt in the hat.
Is it good?
I'm wearing a hat. I'm sitting on a chair. What else do you want in your life?
Honestly, that's the top two things I've always wanted. I'm sitting on a chair, but I don't have a hat. So I'm halfway there to happiness. That's good.
Yeah, me too.
Great. One day we hope to be as happy as you, Matt. Can you tell that we are recording this during the comedy festival? We're all a little bit delirious. You know what? So it's a 3.5 week festival, and my show's nearly done, but I got an email yesterday from the comedy festival that says, like, hey, everyone doing a show? Well done on the first week. And I was like, it's only been a week. Oh, my God.
There's like two more to go.
Two more to go. Let's all hang in there, everybody. But the podcasts never stop. They never stop.
No. Party don't stop.
Party podcast.
Party pod.
Podcast part.
Nothing will stop us aside from the odd technical issue, but that's okay. if you haven't heard the show before, this is where we take it in turns to research a topic and report back to the other two. And it is my turn to talk the talk today.
Which is great because...
Always my favourite.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Dave's my favourite.
Yeah, Dave's my favourite.
Did you just admit to Matt that out of the two other people on the show that he's not your favourite?
Yeah. But I'm only talking in terms of the report. Like, just personally, Matt's my favourite.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, that's what I meant as well. Jess is definitely my favourite person. I just like your reports better, Dave.
Yeah, because then it means Matt and I get to hang out and just dick around, which we love to
catch up a bit.
This is good news for me, my ego, and both of you, because you're each a favourite, and I'm also a favourite, so I don't feel offended.
Yeah, okay.
But then when it comes to me...
Yeah, who's your favourite?
Who's my favourite? Because what if my favourite reporter is also my favourite friend?
Oh, is it, though? Is it...
You are... it's right, you're in luck because my favourite reports are also mine.
Yay!
So, and I also love hanging out with me. So
Dave's everyone's favourite.
I'm the fave. I am the podcast fave. Quote me.
The Beyonce.
Beyoncé is definitely her favourite member of Destiny's Child.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, she's everyone's favourite.
And I'm
member.
Michelle. And Michelle knows that Beyoncé is Beyoncé's favourite, but he's okay with it.
And I'm the other one.
Wait, no, I'm not Michelle. I'm Kelly. You're Michelle.
Yeah, oh. You're the other one, Matt. That Michelle Williams.
Oh, the other one's got a name, though. That's cool. So people know the other one's name. Michelle Williams.
Michelle Williams.
I know that name. Probably because you told me in a previous podcast.
I think this is the third time we've brought up this
And we haven't done a topic on them. Like, we haven't done a report on them.
Fine. Next week I'll do Destiny's Child. But I'm not doing Destiny's Children this week. I am, I'm doing I've got a report here, and we often start with a question.
Mm-hmm.
And to get us in, we'll go ambiguous and we'll see if we can get it, and then we'll go a little bit tighter in on, we'll close in on the topic. But who would you say is the most famous literary character of all time?
Literary character. Literary
so,
character.
Like, it's a. This is obviously an opinion
Jesus
based one.
Jesus Christ. Because yeah. Bible's the biggest selling book of all time.
Yeah.
That's true. All right. So, it's not a big part. I'll say that it's no one biblical.
Okay. Literary character. Harry Potter.
No.
James Bond.
Older. Ooh. Older than James Bond.
Spot the dog.
The dog.
Who is younger than James Bond?
Younger.
Younger.
Oh, you mean in age?
You mean in age.
I see.
Yes. No, no, in terms of creation.
I'll create. What Spot the Dog was written after the James Bond series?
I believe so. Eric Hill was the character. Spot the Dog creator.
I assume they were from the 1600s.
Now, I assume when you say most famous.
Spot the Dog's 500 years old.
I thought so, yeah. I thought it was like Canterbury Tales sort of time frame. All right, what's another?
Well, when you say literary character, for some reason, I'm assuming like.
Sherlock Holmes.
It is Sherlock Holmes! No! Well done!
Sherlock Holmes!
Oh my goodness, and I just looked up Spot the Dog, first published in 1980. There you go.
Because I was going to say, I'm assuming a series. So right, you were correct there.
Have you thought about this one?
Yes!
Too? Have you really?
I feel like we're just the same person.
You are the same person.
That's so good. I love Sherlock Holmes.
You love Sherlock Holmes?
I'm a big fan. So,
all right, I was just going to ask, have you ever read or seen... Mm-hmm.
I've never read. I've seen one of the ones with... the guy who plays Iron Man, Charlie Sheen Jr., Robert Downey Jr.
Charlie Sheen Jr.
Charlie Sheen Jr. Wow. Matt's been broken by his own slipper. Matt, your show hasn't even started the comedy festivals. I don't know what your excuse is over there. Charlie Sheen Jr.
No. I mean, they're sort of similar.
No, they're not.
Okay.
Well, they've both been bad boys in their time, but Charlie Sheen hasn't bounced back the way that Robert Downey has.
That's true. Good point.
Definitely not. So, you've seen the movie, perhaps? That movie?
I've seen that movie, yeah. Him and his sidekick, which I'm not going to have a stab at. Jude Law.
He's a very good Watson. I quite like Jude Law as Watson. But I've also watched Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman. Which is fantastic.
Yes. I've heard that's very good.
Oh, it's brilliant. Brilliant series.
And there's a Lucy Liu one as well.
Yeah. It's called Elementary.
What's that? Elementary, yeah.
It's not as good. I don't mind it, but it's not as good.
I haven't seen the Lucy Liu one. But do you know much about... So have you read any of the short stories?
Yeah, I did as a kid, which is strange. Did you ever have... what was it called? It was like this program that was outside of school.
After school care?
No, it wasn't. It was like a... It was a special day thing. Like, you could get... Your teachers would select you to go off to this...
Was it called Gateways?
Thank you. Gateways.
Oh, my God. We are the same person.
Did you go to Gateways?
I went to Gateways, but because I was very good at maths.
I was going
to
say, you would have been the maths one. I was always the English one, because I'm shit at maths, but very good at English. I was as a kid, I should say.
So, I don't want to blow your mind here, Matt, but Gateways is for gifted children.
Yeah.
Ah. So it's kind is that of, why I've never heard of it?
Yes, yeah. That is definitely why.
That is why. So yeah, I did one that was a Sherlock Holmes kind of themed one when I was about grade 5.
Oh, what happened in the Gateways there?
I just remember we looked at one of the Sherlock Holmes stories, The Hound of the Baskervilles in particular. So I remember a bit about that one. And that was also adapted to the Sherlock series. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Okay, this is
very
great.
Well, do you know much about the creator of Sherlock Holmes?
No, not a lot. Not a lot.
Because I will say that Sherlock Holmes features heavily in this segment. I'm more focusing on... do you know the name of the writer?
I'm going to know it as soon as you say
it. Arthur Conan
Thank
Doyle.
You. Shit. That's so embarrassing that I couldn't...
Who led a very interesting life and often overshadowed by his biggest creation. So I'm going to focus on the life of Conan Doyle, and we're going to come back to Sherlock Holmes on this report that I'm calling Arthur Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes.
You know what? Pretty good. That's a pretty good title.
That's a pretty good title.
I'm very excited about this.
You know what's a great title? And that is Arthur Conan Doyle's full name, which is Arthur Ignatius Conan Doyle.
Oh, Iggy. Shit. Yeah, you two what? With your shitty middle name, James. I know. Fuck off. Ignatius all the way.
That is way better.
Way better.
Ignatius. Well, Conan is also just his middle name. He just added that professionally when he became an adult.
So his name's just Arthur Doyle.
He's actually Arthur Doyle. So throughout school, he was Arthur Doyle, and then he added the Conan.
Which I like. I like the Conan Doyle.
Yeah, it's catchier, isn't it?
Arthur ACD.
Conan Doyle. I enjoy that.
Have you guys seen this movie called Shanghai Nights? It's with Owen Wilson.
And Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have. I watched it on YouTube. That's how good a quality this movie is.
Because it's actually got the origin story of... what's this thing we're talking
Sherlock
about?
Sherlock Holmes.
It's got it in there. Cause
what's this thing we're talking
There's this guy, character called Artie Doyle in it.
And really? They did one of those.
And he's like the... he's like a detective. He's like from Scotland Yard. And he has this interesting way of solving crimes, you know, by like he's able to figure it out off different clues and stuff, really think his way through it. And he's figured out this new way of solving crimes. And then during the movie, Owen Wilson uses a fake name because he's pretending he's royalty or something. And he sees some words on a like a fire extinguisher or something that says Sherlock Holmes. So he uses that as his pretend name. And then at the end of the movie, Artie decides to quit the police force. He says, I think I'm going to start writing some books. I hope you don't mind if I use your name Sherlock Holmes.
Nice.
At the end of the movie.
Does he turn to the camera?
Basically winks at the camera. And then there's...
How recently did you watch this film? Because your recall is fantastic.
It is amazing.
Oh, I watched it like 3 weeks ago.
Well, they're trying to open it up for a third movie. Is that what they were doing?
I don't... yeah, that's right. The next one is just about... the next one was Sherlock Holmes with
Charlie Sheen Jr. Of course, the one that we all remember.
But they also... Like, that wasn't enough for them. They also had this little kid who was sort of like... He was a bit of a scamp, and he sort of stole from Owen Wilson early in the movie. And then later on, they were going to Hollywood, and they said to him, you could come along, but it's no place for a boy like you... Charlie Chaplin, and then he like he stowed away on their horse and cart, and in the back, and then he peeked out so the audience could see, and he'd got a little bit of soot on his upper lip to look like a Charlie Chaplin mustache,
and that man went on to be Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, they didn't say that exactly, but you know, I think
you get it's implied,
the subtext of such a deep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Film.
So is that the I mean, I don't want to steal your thunder. Is that going to be a lot of what you're
absolutely
going to talk about?
Not. Arthur Conan Doyle was in no way a police officer.
Really?
No.
Oh, that's weird. So they took a little bit creative license. Oh dear.
You could call it creative. You could call it poetic. Could I call it a fairly shitty movie? There you go. All right. So we've got Arthur Ignatius Conan Doyle. What a name. Was born on May the 22nd, 1859, in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Scotland.
So he's Scottish.
There you go. Scotland Yard.
No. Nope.
Is that where he was born?
Not in the yard. No. Well, he could have been born. There's no details of his birth.
So it hasn't specifically ruled out.
So let's just assume that that's... Anything I don't say, assume that's the truth.
Okay.
The Doyles, his family, were a prosperous Irish Catholic family. Charles Altamont Doyle, Arthur's father, was, according to Conan Doyle's official website, arthurconandoyle.com, was, quote, a chronic alcoholic, was a moderately successful artist who, apart from fathering a brilliant son, never accomplished anything of note.
Oh, that's a bit brutal.
Feel the 150-year-old burn, Charles.
What a smackdown.
Absolute smackdown.
But that's kind of like everyone, right? Like, no one really achieves anything of note,
But I did read somewhere else on the web that he used to steal money from his kids to, like, pocket money to drink, and then if he couldn't afford alcohol, he would drink varnish and, another quote, stumble around on the floor. So he doesn't sound like a great
Where
guy.
Else do you stumble around on?
I feel like, though, if you're going to...
Floor was mentioned.
If you're going to be a good, a very famous writer... You should have an alcoholic father.
Yeah, okay.
Like, remember we talked about Mary Poppins and her dad was a chronic alcoholic as well?
Yeah, he loved varnish.
Not
he loved
it. Mary Poppins herself, but...
I know, but I forgot her name.
P.L. Travers.
Thank you.
P.L. Old Pants Lady.
Yeah, Pants Lady Travers. We need didn't make that joke at the time, did you?
I don't think so.
That's very funny.
That's very good.
At the age of 22, Charles the alcoholic guy, he had married Mary Foley, who was only 17, and that's Arthur's mother.
Ooh.
She was a gifted storyteller and often read to him growing up, and he thought that was a big influence on him becoming a writer later on. However, it wasn't an easy childhood, as for them there was little money in their family, and even less harmony on account of his father's excessive and erratic behaviour, probably induced by the varnish.
Excessive behaviour.
Oh, yeah. You're
I'm behaving excessively.
Could you behave a little less, please? It's a little too much behaviour over there. Thank you.
It's a seven-year-old telling their dad to calm down.
All right, Dad.
But after Arthur reached his ninth birthday, the wealthy members of his family, sort of his uncles, stepped in and offered to pay for his studies. Arthur didn't want to leave his family and was reportedly in tears all the way to England, where he spent 7 years in a Jesuit boarding school.
Oh.
So there you go. But he loathed the bigotry surrounding his studies and rebelled at corporal punishments, which at the time were particularly brutal, that were dished out to kids that were acting up, and he was not into it at all. During
it's
those
weird.
That's weird.
So weird.
He's an oddball.
What a character.
And it gets worse with this sentence. During those grueling years, Arthur only seemed to have two moments of happiness. One was when he wrote letters to his mother. It's a regular habit that lasted for the rest of her life.
Mummy's boy.
He wrote over 1,500 letters to his mother.
Jesus.
Which is quite a lot.
Imagine, though, if he lived in this day and age where you can text and call. Oh. He'd be one of those guys constantly on the phone
so
to his mummy.
Needy.
Oh,
excuse
no,
me.
Thank
excuse
you.
Me, I've got to take this call. Hello, Mum.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm doing well. He also practiced sports. He was very good at sports, mainly cricket, at which he was also very talented. He discovered that he was also a gifted storyteller and would tell stories to entertain younger students. He'd have big crowds gather around him and he would sort of make stories up on the spot.
Huh, what's that like, telling stories to crowds of people?
Well, Matt and I wouldn't know, but you would. So there you go.
Crowds.
Yeah, bloody, what did you have? 300 last night? All right, Jess. No big deal.
All right, Jess. All right. he graduated in 1876 at the age of 17 and decided to add Conan to his full name. So that's when he started being Arthur Conan Doyle. But his first task as an adult was to sign his alcoholic father's commitment papers to the asylum because he'd drunk himself into such...
Oh,
disarray and illness that he had to spend the rest of his life in an asylum.
First thing I did as an adult is register to vote and get my driver's license.
Oh, there you go.
I'm yet to sign over my father to an asylum, but, you know, there's hope.
What's his varnish drinking habit like?
Not as bad as it's...
Not as bad.
Not yet.
Not as bad as you would assume. Yeah. That's what you would say.
Because you are a very good writer.
You are. But Matt, you said before that you thought he might have been a detective. Jess, do you have any idea what career he actually followed before he was a writer?
An actor. Well, that's the only other... I mean, he was an actor in the movie.
No, I don't know.
Well, Arthur decided to pursue...
Jim's mowing.
Yeah, let's have a guess. Can we have a clue and then some guess? We'll guess. I like guessing games.
Well, I don't want to... I'm trying to think of a clue.
Okay, you can't give a clue. Okay.
That's not too... Give a
I wanted to say he was some sort of spy, but I'm thinking of Ian
Fleming.
No, it was
a factory worker.
Very respected job.
Okay.
Banker.
Not a banker.
No, that's
respected.
That's PL.
Law? Then. No.
No, not lawyer.
He said respected.
Got him.
Cop that.
Certainly wasn't an accountant then. Fuck him.
Oh, man, I can't believe you brought that up in front of yourself.
respected.
A teacher.
No.
Doctor.
Doctor. He was pursued a medical career.
Ooh.
That's right. This decision was influenced by Dr. Brian Charles Waller, a young lodger his mother had taken in to make ends meet.
That kind of makes sense because a lot of Sherlock Holmes's, like, the clues that he picks up on are kind of scientific and...
Scientific chemistry.
And isn't the other guy a doctor?
Yeah. Watson's a doctor.
Is he a medical doctor?
Yes.
Or has he got like a doctorate in podcasts like you were going to get?
He is a medical doctor.
He's a real doctor, unlike I was going to be. So Dr. Waller had the guy that lived with his mother for a bit, had trained at the University of Edinburgh, and this is where Arthur was sent to carry out his medical studies. So he's moved back to Scotland, now he's studying. The young medical student met a number of future world-famous Scottish authors who were also at the uni at the time, and he was friends with J.M. Barrie, author of Peter Pan, and Robert Louis Stevenson, Treasure Island, and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So they're all... probably the three most famous Scottish authors of the day all hanging out at the same uni.
As soon as you said Robert Louis Stevenson, I'm going to regret saying this. Like, I sung it in my head and then I was like, what song is that from? And then I sang the rest of it and it's from a tripod song.
Oh, that's, why is
Robert
that a regret?
Robert Louis Stevenson and Edgar Allan Poe. Yeah.
I think, well, Edgar Allan Poe was a big influence on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and his early writing. A couple of years into his studies at the age of 19, Arthur decided to try his pen at writing a short story. So he'd always been good at telling these stories, but he'd never written anything down before. The result, entitled The Mystery of Sarsala Valley, was actually heavily compared to Edgar Allan Poe at the time. And it was accepted into an Edinburgh magazine called Chambers Journal, and he's published one other story that year. So sort of a slow start, but he's got a... his first sort of
but
professional
first
writing
crack
job.
Was, yeah, was his first go at writing was published and well received. That's good.
It's real good. And he was also a big adventurer. And when he was 20 years old, in his third year of medical studies, he had a chance for adventure that knocked on his door. He was offered the post of a ship's surgeon on the Hope, which is a which was a whaling boat about to leave for the Arctic Circle.
For some reason, I didn't put together whaling like the animal. I put it together like,
we really need a surgeon. Everyone's really sick.
Sorry.
She wails. That boat.
She wails.
She wails.
So this this boat went to the shores of Greenland, where the crew proceeded to hunt for seals. The young medical student Doyle...
It's funny, because when Dave said seals, I was thinking, like, you know, in Tupperware or something, hunting for the things that keep that keeps freshness in, you know, that, like, seals. That's what I was thinking. Isn't that funny? I'm going to regret saying that.
Yes, you are, because the next sentence was, the young medical student was appalled by the brutality of the exercise hunting for these plastic seals.
Was that your Jess Perkins impression?
It was not a good one. No. I'm pretty good. Like, I, generally speaking, am a great mimic, but I was a little off that time.
I'm going to regret saying this.
It's really fun to talk like that.
It's fun being me, baby.
I'll ask you not to, because otherwise the listener will have trouble differentiating between the two of you. I was watching the words come out of your mouth, and I was thinking, what is this trickery? It's clearly Jess Perkins' voice.
All right, fair enough. I'll keep that down.
But apart from the brutality of the seal hunting, he really enjoyed the camaraderie on board the ship and the whale hunt and everything. All this life at sea sort of fascinated him, and he was later quoted, he said, I went on board the whaler, a big, straggling youth, but I came off a powerful, well-grown man.
Oh, okay.
So he felt like the Arctic had, another quote, awakened the soul of a born wanderer.
That's so wanky.
Awaken the soul of a born wanderer.
That's him. But adventure was a big, adventure and travel was a big part of his life throughout the rest of his days. But he returned to his studies in 1880 at the age of 21. He obtained his Bachelor of Medicine and Master of Surgery degree, which is like 4 years and you become a surgeon in those days. It's pretty good.
It's not like that anymore.
No, it's like 15 years.
Yeah.
And on the occasion of getting his Bachelor of Medicine, he drew a humorous sketch of himself receiving his diploma with the caption, Licensed to Kill.
Ah, oh, Bond.
Bond. Bond, like 70 years before Bond.
Pre-Bond.
Pre-bonding.
Pre-bondage.
Hmm. That's when you get the moisturizer out. Is that pre-bondage? Make sure your skin is all supple before you get the bondage happening. Hey guys, time for some bondage. Well, let's get the pre-bondage happening. Pass me the...
let's get the moisturizer out.
The Salvoline. Is that a thing? Salvoline, that doesn't sound like a real thing.
Salvoline sounds like something that Doyle's dad would drink.
Yeah.
It sounds petrol-based.
Yeah, well that's...
Solvoline.
Solvoline.
Solvoline, you know what I mean? No, that's Valvoline. That's
Valvoline.
What I'm thinking of.
Valvoline.
You think you have Sorbeline?
Sorbeline.
Mixed with Vaseline.
Vaseline, yeah. That's what you use before eye bondage.
Vas.
I don't know what you guys... Pass me the Vaso. Pass me the Vaso and the Sorbo. That's what I say. About to get some Bondo on.
Someone said to me, pass me the Sorbo. I'd imagine that talking about sorbet.
Sorbet. No, that's totally different. Pass me the Sorbo, bae. That's what I say before I bond. Bondage. Which one's bondage? Is that right?
So when we get tied up.
Tied up. Oh, yeah.
What was the option? What was the other thing going through your mind?
I thought it was maybe the thing where you get, whipped. What's that one?
Was that S&M?
S&M. Symphony and Metallica. No.
Correct. All right. Continuing his adventuring, Arthur Conan Doyle's first employment once graduating uni was as a medical officer on a steamboat called the Mayumba.
Boop, boop. That's a steamboat impression.
That was really good.
Thank you.
It's a battered old vessel navigating between Liverpool and the west coast of Africa. So he's adventuring again, but he did not like Africa as much as the Arctic. And when he returned, he decided, that's enough for me. He started his own practice in Portsmouth. He rented a house, but he was only able to afford to furnish the two rooms his patients would see. So they'd come in and it would look really nice. But then behind that, it was a completely empty house.
Oh.
But he was compassionate and hardworking in his early days, so that by the end of his third year, his practice started to gain him a comfortable income.
Oh, good.
So he's making good money as a doctor. And during the next years, the young man divided his time between trying to be a good doctor and struggling to become a recognized author. So he had a taste for being published, and he really wants to pursue that as well. In August of 1885, he married a young woman called Louisa Hawkins. Louisa, or Tui, as she was nicknamed.
Tui.
Tui. Tui.
Don't hate it.
Don't hate it.
Don't hate it. You know I love nicknames.
Yeah. Where do you reckon that comes from, Jess?
Louisa. I guess it's probably not from her name. It's probably like some drunken party story.
She drinks Tui's Red.
That's what it is. Good on her.
You reckon that's what it is? Yeah, is that where you're going?
Yeah.
Classic English 18s.
I thought it might have been that she like had two of everything. Old Tui over there.
Old Tui.
So always travels in pairs.
Or maybe she's only a 2 out of 10.
Oh, or 2
that's
out of 5.
Probably it. Oh, that's better. That's twice
slightly,
as good.
Slightly better. That's a 4 out of 10.
Now. Yeah.
What if 40%. She's a 2 out of 2?
Oh,
that's now you're getting a really good territory.
Which is a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Ah, you are which good at maths. No wonder you got into pathways.
100 out of 100 gateways.
Gateways, sorry.
The gateway to
pathways
success.
Is like a Christian thing, I think.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that was secretly a Christian thing that we were
doing.
Yeah,
probably.
As well.
Did you go to a Catholic school?
No, did you?
Yeah, I did. I was thinking maybe it was some sort of Catholic
they
thing.
They sneak you in that way.
Anyway, he married
with
Louisa.
The fun of maths. They get you in the back door.
To tempt you with the devil's numbers. Oh, imagine maths. It served me well. Tui was the sister of one of his patients that he had failed to save.
Oh, Jesus.
So he married her.
Oh, far out.
Yeah, it's bad. I know.
That's taking your guilt to another level.
Mm. And he did feel guilty that he was not able to save her brother.
Brutal.
Yeah. Surprisingly, instead of going on a honeymoon with his young wife, he went on a tour of Ireland with the Stonyhurst Wanderers, the school's old boys' cricket team. So there you go.
Sure.
So, hey, look, I'll marry you and look after you, but I'm not going on a honeymoon. I'm going on a boys' trip.
Yeah.
To Ireland. 4 years later, Arthur and Tui had their first child, Mary, and in 1892, their second child, Arthur.
Wasn't his mother's name Mary?
I think you're thinking of Jesus. Yeah.
It's like it was Mary, named
I'm
after,
always thinking about Jesus.
Named after his mother, that's right.
That's nice.
And then they had another child called Arthur, who was nicknamed Kingsley.
Aww.
Oh, what?
Because it was like Arthur Jr.
Yeah, so
they gave
him
a
different
nickname.
Name.
Kingsley, that's a bit cute. Better name for a dog than a child. But
why not just name him Kingsley?
Yeah, that's a good point. Dave?
Look, I'm not the man, the myth, the legend that is Arthur Conan Doyle.
Good point. That is a very good point.
Very
I hadn't
point.
Considered that.
I'm sorry, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you so much. In March 1886, at the age of 27, Conan Doyle started writing the novel which catapulted him to fame. At first, it was named A Tangled Skein, S-K-E-I-N, and the two main characters were going to be called Sheridan Hope,
yuck,
Sherlock Holmes, and Ormond Sacker.
Horrible.
For Dr. John Watson.
That does sound like that's random. That's a random letter
yeah,
jumble.
Tui, think of a word. Sacker. Perfect. It's in. It's in.
I love you.
But Tui, it took a couple of years, but I love you. You're so good to me.
God, I love you. I'm sorry I killed your brother.
I'm sorry I went on that cricket team.
Wait, I said too much. I'm sorry I didn't save your brother.
Fuck. Shit.
Anyway, a cup of tea or I'll get it. You sit down. You look comfy. Anyway, love you.
It took 2 years, but 2 years later, this novel was published in Beaton's Christmas Annual, which is a sort of a magazine type thing. That's where a bunch of stuff was published in those days in serialized form, under the title A Study in Scarlet, which introduces to the immortal, now named Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. So that was the first time he went with those names the first time.
He's an immortal, is he? Like a vampire?
I wouldn't be surprised if there is fan fiction where he is a vampire.
Did you know that?
Who? Sherlock or?
Yeah, Sherlock Holmes.
Is immortal.
They've just said the immortal Sherlock Holmes.
Are we still talking about 130 years later? Doyle was paid £25, or about $5,000 in 2015 money, for all the rights to the story. But Conan Doyle wasn't even that impressed with his own work. He much preferred his next novel, Micah Clarke, which, have you heard of that?
No.
Which, though well received, is now almost forgotten. There yeah. you go. This marked the start of a serious dichotomy in the author's life. There was Sherlock Holmes, who very quickly became world famous in stories this author considered at best commercial. And there are a number of serious historical novels, poems and plays, and even our sort of non-fiction stuff, for which he expected to be recognised as a serious author, but no one ever cared about as much as Sherlock Holmes. The first Holmes story, we'll say, was well received, but it didn't make him that famous straight off the bat. That was nearly it for the character. He wasn't going to write another story, but in August of 1889, a guy called Joseph Marshall Stoddart, who's a managing editor of a successful magazine in Philadelphia, he came to London to organise a British edition of his magazine. He wanted some local writers to write for the magazine. He invited Conan Doyle for dinner in London at the elegant Langham Hotel, which was later mentioned in a lot of Sherlock Holmes novels. The other writer he invited to the dinner party was the already famous Oscar Wilde.
Ooh, I've heard of him.
Heard of Oscar Wilde? Physically, the men could not have been more opposite. Oscar Wilde appeared to be a quote, languorous dandy. So he was a big guy, whereas Conan Doyle, another quote, this is from his website, which I'd be pissed if this said this 130 years after this had happened to me. In spite of his best suit, looked somewhat like a walrus in Sunday clothes.
Sweet Jesus, you didn't have to mention his looks.
He's got like, if you see photos of him, he's got a big walrus-style mustache.
Oh, that's all right then.
So despite being very opposite men, though, Arthur and Oscar Wilde got on very famously. And as a result of this dinner, Stoddart, the magazine guy, commissioned Doyle to write another Sherlock Holmes story, and he got Wilde to write his only novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray, which is a very famous work. So this dinner was very significant to 19th century literature. The next book that Holmes was featured in was called The Sign of Four, and elevated the popularity of the character. So now it's becoming world famous. In spite of his literary success, his medical practice, which was flourishing and doing quite well, and a harmonious family life with his kids, Doyle was very restless. So he decided, because he always wants a bit of adventure, he decided to move to Vienna, where he wanted to become an ophthalmologist.
Oh, yeah. We've all been there.
that like, classic midlife crisis.
Yeah, I had it early. I had it in my teens. I'm like, I went ophthalmology mad. I was like, I just ophthalmologized everything. My whole bedroom was basically an ophthalmologist clinic.
Do you know what an ophthalmologist does, Matt?
No idea.
You don't know, do you?
No.
It's an eye man. He became an eye man.
He's
an eye man.
Yeah, right.
But he didn't like living there, as you found, Matt, after your rebellious teenage years, after you tore down those posters of eye diseases all around the world. Yeah, replaced them with tism.
Tism back up
again. Of course, you are quite...
I mean, in the end, maybe that's why I like tism so much, because all you can see is their eyes. They wear
masks.
And you're an eye man.
And I'm an eye man. I've always been an eye man.
What colour are my eyes?
Blue.
Green, I'm gonna say blue.
Blue, green.
Green.
Yes! Fuck, I thought it was a 50-50 question, and then you threw green into the works.
Well, you think there's only blue and brown options?
Yeah, I forgot about
it. It's a bluey green.
It's a bluey green. I'm bluey also green. Wearing blue, which makes them look bluer. This can all get cut.
Dave's got beautiful
Dave's
baby
blues.
Dave's
got gorgeous eyes.
Beautiful Thank baby
you.
Blues.
You've got good eyes too. You've got beautiful blue eyes.
My eyes are my best thing. Physically.
Physically.
You know, outside, if you were going to count other, like metaphysical stuff, then it'd be like, you know, second or third.
What's number one?
My brain.
Name a metaphysical thing and I'll tell you.
Have you got toes that do strange things?
Yes, I do.
I had a sneaking suspicion. Sneaking suspicion.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Doyle didn't like being an ophthalmologist. He didn't like living in Vienna overseas. He didn't like it there. So he returned to England to be an ophthalmologist on his own account, where according to his own biography, not a single patient ever came through his door. So he set up a practice to be an eye man. No one ever came in, which as an eye doctor, he was very unpopular, but that gave him a lot of time to write because he could write all day long. Imagine setting up a business and no one ever comes in.
Yeah, no one bothers you. That's great.
That sounds so
good. You probably
get
so much work done without any work to do. Be great.
Bloody hell.
The dream.
What a... Like, that seems crazy.
But no one...
An eye doctor.
And also, he's quite a famous author at this time, I will say. No one ever decides to visit or bother.
Maybe it's too intimidating.
Yeah.
That does sound very weird. I mean, maybe people are like... I'm a fan of your little books, mate, but I'm not going to trust you with my eyes. I need them to see.
He began writing short stories about Holmes in this now abundant extra time that he has, and they were published in the Strand magazine, which is very, very popular, these short stories. This collaboration lasted for decades and was instrumental in making the author, the magazine, and the artist world famous. After nearly dying from the flu in 1891, Doyle decided that he'd been foolish to try and balance a medical and writing career and gave up medicine for good.
Wow. He's like,
I'm going to be a writer now, even though he'd already been a writer because no one came to his doctor's practice.
So, when he... It's weird that he gave up medicine after he totally failed at it. No, it's not for me. No, I think the people decided that, mate, already.
Yeah, when no one knocked on your door.
I know, it's like someone going, you don't fire me.
Yeah, I quit.
Yeah, I think we fired you, buddy. Jog on.
Usually it would be the other way around, though, wouldn't it? You'd try your hand at being an author and then you're like, well, I've got to get a day job. But he quit the day job to do the very creative.
That would very rarely happen.
That you get rejected for something you've trained at university for four
He's
years.
He's telling but his then, parents.
And like a well sought after career.
I just
too.
Want to be like a doctor. No one wants me. Fine, I'll have to be a world famous, really rich author.
His parents like, look, we support you in your little doctor folly idea, but we want you to have a sensible backup plan being a world famous
come on just create some
writer.
Sort of literary detective
that's all I ask.
Just have a back come on have a backup
that
have
for
a safety
us. We just want a safety net, mate.
Hey, you probably won't need it. You'll probably be really successful, but you know, only 1 in 1,000 doctors become wealthy from their profession. Look at the stats. Writers, that's a surefire thing. Everyone needs a writer.
Yeah.
Everyone.
See, what I get what you were doing there, because it's...
It's the opposite of that.
Yeah. We actually... The doctors are well sought after, because everybody at some point in their life needs a doctor. Whereas writers...
I didn't get what we were doing.
There's lots of those, and not all of them are good.
Well, that's it, yeah. I didn't really get... Yeah. I knew it felt funny, but I wasn't sure why, so I appreciate you.
Yeah, that's quite funny.
Filling me in. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
That's
I appreciate
good.
It too.
Thank, good comedy.
All right, let's talk about Sherlock Holmes. So he's created him, he's had him in two novels and started doing in short stories. Sherlock Holmes is known as a consulting detective. That's his title in these stories. And he was based upon Doyle's medical lecturer. So it was good that he went to university, otherwise he wouldn't have thought of it. A guy called Dr. Joseph Bell. Bell had amazing observational skills, and as well as being a great doctor, he prided himself on being able to not only diagnose a man or woman's illness just by looking at them, but he'd also tell their nationality and the job they did just from looking at them.
Wow.
Which, admittedly, in some cases is much easier than others. If you're coming and you're dressed as the milkman, you're like,
probably a milkman.
I got a sneaking suspicion that you are a police officer trying to trick me. I'm Joseph Bell.
Or if you come come in dressed as an eye doctor. You're like, famous author.
Famous, exactly. No one's seen you in years. But then Bell would later write to Doyle saying, "You yourself are Sherlock Holmes, and you well know it."
That's kind of beautiful.
We put that back on him saying, "There's just as much of you in there is of me."
That's, I think that's lovely.
Hmm.
Doyle would say that detective stories at the time in the 1880s relied on chance to solve crimes, and this really pissed him off because often they'd come across a clue or take a chance. And he wanted reasoning and the observation that Dr. Joseph Bell used on his patients to be applied to solving crimes and mysteries. And obviously that's a staple 130 years later, but at the time that wasn't being done. The books place Sherlock Holmes' birth in the year 1854, which makes him 5 years older than Doyle himself. And Holmes first developed his methods of deduction as an undergraduate. His earliest cases he pursued as an amateur came from fellow university students.
Oh.
That's where he got his skills. A meeting with a classmate's father led him to adopt detection as a profession, and he spent 6 years after university as a consultant before financial difficulties led him to accept little old man called Dr. John H. Watson as a fellow lodger in his famous address.
Hamish.
Ah, I was going to ask if you knew. Is that right? I think it's actually Horatio.
It's Hamish.
Okay. Horatio is a fantastic name.
But it's Hamish.
Hammer.
And do you know...
Hammer.
Do you know their famous address where they shared a flat?
221B Baker Street.
That is correct. 133 Porter Road, East Bentley.
Is that your childhood home?
No. It's a fictional address. Oh, it's actually in Bentley.
No, it's not in Bentley. It's 221B Baker Street, London. That's right.
B Baker Street, like Humphrey B. Bear.
No,
Baker.
221B.
B Baker Street. What's the B stand for?
B.
Like flat B.
Barry Baker?
Yes.
Barry Baker Street, London. That's right.
Okay.
Okay.
This is when the first published story, A Study in Scarlet, begins. So I don't know if you've seen the first episode of Sherlock, the BBC TV series, which I think you have.
Yeah, I have.
It also starts...
No, I haven't.
It also starts with them moving in together as the novel does.
Bloody great.
Should I watch it?
Writers of the BBC series Sherlock, one of whom plays Mycroft, the writers of that series are very big Sherlock Holmes fans, obviously, because they wrote a series about it. But I mean, like, they wanted to really do it justice. So the series is actually very close to the books, or it's a really good adaptation. It's just a great series.
You're a big fan of that little-known series that you're really championing there.
It's really good.
In the books, Holmes works as a detective for 23 years, with physician John Watson assisting him for 17 of those years. And all but four of Doyle's 60-odd stories are narrated and told from the perspective of Dr. John Watson. So Watson's pretty much Holmes' biographer in the books.
And right. In the series, John Watson has a blog about
In the modern time.
Yeah, it's set in the modern time. And he has a blog about it, so it's sort of from his perspective as well. It's very clever.
So, but you said not all of them. Who did the other ones? Who narrated the others?
Oh, there's a couple told from Holmes's perspective.
Oh.
Just to mix things up a little bit.
Ooh.
What was it totally different, the writing style and stuff in those ones?
Well, the perspective's completely different.
He's crazy, right? He's a drunk.
What's a first person more than a third person?
He's not
person?
A drunk.
Well, I will. Let's get into this. Watson describes Holmes as a bohemian in his habits and lifestyle.
Huh.
Of course, Holmes is famous for smoking a pipe, but he occasionally uses addictive drugs, especially in the absence of stimulating cases, because he always wants to keep his mind going. He uses cocaine and morphine. He injects them both, which were both legal in London at the time. I haven't seen all of the BBC show. Does he use any syringes?
No, I don't think he does in the BBC one. In the American one, Elementary, he is recovering addict, and that's how Joan Watson, Lucy Liu, comes into his life, because she's his like sponsor, so like there to make sure that he doesn't go back to the drugs, but then sort of helps him in his crime solving.
I already dislike that plot. That
sounds not that great.
Like they've just tried to,
because they've got a woman in there
in the BBC one. I don't think there's,
I just don't like the carer thing.
Yeah, but in the BBC one, I think they allude to the fact that he may have been susceptible to that sort of thing in the past, but no, I don't think he uses it at all.
Right, well, he does a little bit in the books, and he's obviously struggling financially. That's why he gets Watson in the first place. But by the end of his career, he's worked for a lot of powerful people, including the monarchs of Europe, and so he's quite wealthy when he retires because he's been paid a lot of money. Holmes has many skills and uses amazing disguises to conceal his identity. He's a great actor as well. And Watson first described Holmes's skill in the first novel, A Study in Scarlet, and he actually has a list of these things. He has his knowledge of literature is nil, knowledge of philosophy, nil, knowledge of astronomy, nil, knowledge of politics, feeble, knowledge of botany, variable, but good when it comes to opium, knowledge of geology, practical but limited. Tells at a glance different soils from each other.
Getting better.
Knowledge of chemistry, profound.
There we go. So
he's very good at chemistry. Knowledge of anatomy, accurate but unsystematic. But I guess that's
coming from a doctor.
Dramatic. No,
right. Are you just saying words that rhyme with words now?
I'm feeling a bit weird.
Knowledge of sensational literature, immense. He appears to know every detail of every horror perpetuated in the century.
Yeah, that sounds all right.
Into some pretty graphic stuff. Plays the violin well.
He does, yep.
Is an expert boxer and swordsman.
Very much depicted in the Robert Downey Jr.
Very good fighter. Also fights with a walking stick a few times in the books. He has a good practical knowledge of British law. There you go, number 11, just to make sure that he is...
I mean, why did he go through those things at the start that he had no knowledge of? I mean...
Just to give you an idea for this character. Like, he is not interested in anything that isn't relevant to...
Right.
Yeah, so he's one of those people that's like a genius when it comes to some
AFL things. Football, nil. Like, why didn't he mention... you mentioned botany. Why didn't he mention,
this is the 1800s, mate.
Biology. Ah, biology wasn't around in the 1800s. Well,
don't
great.
Get sassy with me.
I'll sass if I want to sass.
Matt.
I'm from Sassafras.
When it comes to Matt, number one, sass, immense.
I was wondering, does he have because he's sort of like a weird old school superhero, right? Sort of.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Does he have an arch nemesis?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I'm about
to talk
about
him. Is his arch nemesis it's something like Rick Moranis, right?
His name is Professor Moriarty.
Yes, I knew it.
So back in the real world, Arthur Conan Doyle... he's bored of Sherlock Holmes, and a few times he toys with the idea of killing off the character, but his mother sends letters saying, don't do that, all of England will crack it hard. And he says, all right, I won't kill
mummy.
It off.
Yeah, mummy.
But in 1893, he's very, very impulsive, Arthur Conan Doyle. He decides to kill off Sherlock Holmes just 2 years after becoming a professional writer. So not very long. And now it's a world-famous character. In the short story The Final Problem, published in December 1893, Sherlock Holmes and his nemesis, Professor Moriarty, plunge to their deaths at the Reichenbach Falls in Switzerland, which is a real place that Doyle had visited. And as a result, there was a big outcry. 20,000 readers cancelled their subscriptions to the Strand magazine.
Oh, shit.
Big financial repercussions for the magazine especially.
That is amazing.
But Doyle was happy, now freed from his medical career and from fictional character that oppressed him and overshadowed what he considered to be his finer work, he immersed himself in even more intensive activity. So he started writing heaps and heaps and heaps, and this frenzied life may have explained why the former physician didn't notice the serious deterioration of his wife's health.
Oh.
Not very good. By the time he finally became aware of how sick she was, Tui was diagnosed with tuberculosis.
No, Tui!
She was only given a few months to live, but Doyle sprang into action, and due to his care, she was able to live for many more years. So he moved around to different climates, which sounds really good. But writing incessantly, looking after Louisa... No longer a wife, but now a patient, and then losing his father, who finally died in the sanatorium, deeply troubled Conan Doyle. It may have been his resulting depression which caused him to become more and more fascinated by, quote, life beyond the veil.
Oh.
He had long been attracted to spiritualism, but when he joined the Society of Physical Research, it was considered to be a public declaration of his interests and his belief in the occult. More on that later.
Ooh.
More on that later.
Bit of sizzle.
That is good sizzle.
But so he's now looking after his wife, but his marriage isn't going so well. It's widely debated as to whether he acted on his feelings, but Doyle fell in love with another woman.
Oh.
A lady called Jean Leckie shortly before his wife's death.
But Tui's not well. Don't be that guy.
And Jean Leckie's 14 years his junior. During that same time, Conan Doyle wrote a play about Sherlock Holmes. He wanted to shore up his bank account, so to speak. He was struggling a little bit for money. The play opened in London, was critically panned, but it was a huge financial success, so he's got some more money rolling in.
Sweet.
Then in 1899, the Boer War started in Southern Africa, and he declared to his horrified family that he was going to go and volunteer. Having written about many battles without the opportunity to test his skills as a soldier in his own eyes, he wanted to prove himself. He felt that this would be his last opportunity to do so. But not surprisingly, being somewhat overweight and at the age of 40, he was deemed unfit to enlist.
Huh, funny that.
Instead, he volunteered as a ship's doctor and sailed to Africa. So he really wanted to get there. During the few months he spent in Africa, he saw more soldiers and medical staff die of typhoid fever than of war wounds. So yeah, he was made a knight for his work on a non-fiction pamphlet regarding the Boer War.
He was made a knight.
So you know how he's called Sir Arthur Conan Doyle? It's not because of Sherlock Holmes.
It's because of a pamphlet.
It's because of a pamphlet he made on the Boer War.
What the fuck?
Well, it's the whole knight system's a load of shit, right? We've talked about this in the past, I think. Like, it's like a lot of musicians and stuff, they're knighted for their charity work. It's yeah, but it's really because they're the Beatles or whatever, right?
I think that this is a similar case.
This must be a really amazing pamphlet.
Amazing pamphlet. He had some sweet clip art on there.
There's a picture. Wow.
Well, the prince who knighted him, it was rumoured at the time, had knighted him because it was rumoured that he was a big fan of Sherlock Holmes, and he hoped that by knighting him that he would inspire him to write more Sherlock Holmes stories.
Why not just say, hey, can you write some more Sherlock Holmes stories? It's me, a member of the royal family. Do it.
I'll knight you if you do. United anyway. Hopefully you'd do it just in case.
Yeah.
Doyle returned to England and didn't start writing, and he ran for Parliament.
Oh, my God.
But he was not elected.
This guy would be so frustrating to be friends with or married to. Just jumps around all the
time. Why doesn't he have a biopic? Sounds like a great movie.
He sounds exhausting.
He definitely
like Forrest
is.
Forrest Gump or something. Yeah. He's done a bit of everything. Although Forrest Gump is lovable.
Yeah, he did well.
In 1901, after an eight-year hiatus, Doyle brought Sherlock Holmes back in the novel The Hound of the Baskervilles. And it was a massive success. But in his personal life, writing, looking after Louisa, seeing Jean Leckie, the other lady, as discreetly as possible, playing golf, driving fast cars, floating in the sky in hot air balloons, flying in early archaic and rather frightening aeroplanes, spending time on muscle development, as bodybuilding used to be called at the time.
Muscle development.
Doyle was active, but not really contented.
Oh, crazy.
I was surprised when he said fast cars. I didn't realise fast cars were around.
Well, he was, without ever having driven one before, because he was quite wealthy at the time, he's one of the first people in England to ever buy a car.
Wow, that's amazing.
Just because he had money to splash around. And he competed in a couple of rallies as well, really early on, like in 1911, really early on.
Yeah, wow. Sick, I guess.
But it's not enough for him. His lingering deep desire for public service made him go for a second attempt at politics in 1906. But despite his fame, he lost the election once more.
Jeez, they don't like anything about him apart from one of his characters.
Like, come on, just keep doing Sherlock, it's all we want.
The character he doesn't like, that's the only thing anyone likes about him.
That would be so frustrating.
It would be hard. Especially, yeah, and also that's the thing that's paying for all your other stuff as well.
So you've got to keep doing it.
Keep doing it to pay for your adventures. After Louisa died in his arms on the 4th of July 1906, Doyle slipped in a debilitating state of depression lasting many months. But finally, after 9 years of a secret courtship, Doyle married Jean Leckie, very publicly in front of 250 guests, a year later in 1907. They had three children, adding to his two from his first marriage. So five children all up for him. Then the First World War broke out in 1914, and being the adventurer, he offered to enlist, but being 55 years old at this time, he was too old.
Also, he got
married. You were too old at 40.
No, it was 15 years, and he's like, I'll do it.
He got married in like his mid to late 40s, remarried, and then had three more kids.
Yeah.
What a life.
I know, he's always going. He was told that he was too old, but when the Navy lost more than 1,000 lives in a single day, his brilliant mind, never at rest, Doyle made suggestions to the War Office to provide inflatable rubber belts and inflatable lifeboats, which subsequently saved a lot of people in the war.
What the fuck?
He invented those?
Well, he suggested that they would really help out. Most government officials found him irritating at best. One of the exceptions was Winston Churchill, who wrote back to him and thanked him for his ideas.
Far out. I find him irritating.
You find him irritating?
He's just annoying.
He does feel like an annoying mama's boy.
Oh, he's a mama's boy. Imagine, though, if you're sort of in a circle of friends that he's kind of a part of, and you're like having a nice party at somebody's house, and then he turns up, you're like, fucking
daughter. He's the one that comes along as a package deal.
Yeah, yeah. And you're like, oh.
I hate this package deal, guys.
I just wanted Oscar Wilde to come and he brought his mate.
Yeah, hey, Arthur, good to see you, man. Oh, okay, you're already talking.
It's kind of like this podcast and me.
Well, I'm a fan of the guy. I think he's just got a thirst for life, which he showed again when he was writing a book which was going to be called The British Campaign in France and Flanders about World War I. He was given permission to visit the British and French fronts in 1916. And the author was never able to forget the horrors of what he saw. So he went to war, but he just wasn't shooting. As I mentioned earlier, following the death of his wife in 1906, and then the death of his son Kingsley during the First World War, who'd been part of it and then developed an illness and died.
Oh, no.
And the deaths of his brothers, his two brothers-in-laws, and his two nephews.
Oh, jeez.
A lot of people, sadly in England, a lot of people, young men died in the First World War, obviously. He sank into a deep depression. He found solace supporting spiritualism and its attempts to find proof of existence beyond the grave, and he became obsessed with it.
Okay.
So I said more on the occult, and here it is. Whilst researching the topic of fairies, he came across some pictures belonging to a family in Cottingley, which is in rural Yorkshire, which are known to history as the Cottingley Fairies. These images seem to show several small fairies dancing in the presence of two teenage girls. Conan Doyle championed the photos as evidence that fairies existed and eventually included them in a 1922 book, The Coming of Fairies.
Oh. Is it porn?
Possible eye. Decades later, the two girls in the photos admitted that they were obviously fake, but Doyle at the time was obsessed with it. He spent close to $1 million...
Sorry?
$1 million promoting the book The Coming of Fairies to try and prove that fairies existed.
Oh, my God.
So the girls in the photos were like...
Nah.
They're like, oh, man, like, we thought it was a bit of fun. I feel so bad.
Oh, no.
We really didn't think anyone was actually going to... Oh, my God.
Take this seriously.
No, it's clearly...
And now that guy that invented Sherlock Holmes spent $1 million... I can't say that it's fake.
Oh,
he's exhausting.
Absolutely.
Fairies.
What a
time to be alive where you could believe that fairies were real. Or was it seen as being a bit...
It was seen a bit, but some people were really interested in proving that it existed. This is only the 1920s, so in a century that we have all been alive in. So it's not that. It's not like it's 2,000 years ago when people haven't seen
it. That's amazing. I can't believe
this guy. This is like a medical man, very famous.
He's intelligent.
Really intelligent.
But in some ways.
Also very dumb. But I know people like that.
Very dumb. In 1919, a magician who was famous at the time staged a seance at Doyle's flat in Bloomsbury. Doyle attended the seance in his flat, obviously, and declared the clairvoyance to be genuine. Doyle was friends for a time also with Harry Houdini, who I'm sure you've heard of, the American magician, who was the most famous magician probably ever, who himself became a prominent opponent of the spiritualist movement. He would obviously do these magic tricks, but then he would say, hey, it's all a trick, and anyone who says that it's not a trick is a liar.
Wow.
Although Houdini insisted that spiritualist mediums employed trickery and constantly exposed people as frauds, and because he's a magician, he would explain how they were doing it, Doyle became convinced that Houdini himself possessed supernatural powers and was hiding something. Houdini performed an impressive trick at Doyle's home. Houdini assured Doyle that the trick was pure illusion and that he was trying to prove a point to Doyle, not endorsing the phenomena. He was saying, hey, I'm doing this to prove to you that it's fake. But Doyle refused to believe that it was a trick, and the two very publicly fell out with each other.
Oh, God.
So Doyle was like, no, you're lying, mate. You are hiding magic from me.
So he's a bit not quite right.
Well, I think
Jesus, that took you way too long to say.
He's had a lot of death in his family, and I think it's sort of sending
him. Don't stand up for him. He's an idiot.
Well, I think he's just
I've turned on him. He's an idiot.
Lost it a little bit.
Jess, don't turn.
I've turned.
That's not like you.
Doyle continually praised and championed famous mystics who were repeatedly exposed or publicly admitted that they were frauds. So it's not, his image is not looking too good, because he keeps saying, nah, Matt Stewart, he's definitely magical, and then you come out 2 weeks later and say, nah, I'm not. It was just a trick.
It's a trick. It's just a show. It's a trick.
That's what he would say, though, isn't it? He doesn't want you all to know that he's magic.
That's sort of the attitude he had towards Houdini here. After 1918, because of his deepening involvement into the occult, Conan Doyle wrote very little fiction, writing arduously about spiritualism instead. So he would just write... He was a hard worker, so he would write dozens of books about spiritualism. Subsequent trips to America, Australia, and to Africa, accompanied by his wife and 3 children, were also on spiritual crusades and to give public talks on spiritualism.
He's become the worst.
As years went by, having spent millions of dollars or millions of pounds in the pursuit of his dreams, Conan Doyle was faced with the necessity to earn more money. Yay. He published books about his other famous character. Have you heard of Professor Challenger?
No.
This is a famous novel called The Lost World.
Oh, I do know recognize The Lost World.
But not from Jurassic Park.
Oh, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, right. He wrote 12 more short Sherlock Holmes stories. He wrote 12 more short Sherlock Holmes stories in the 1920s for more money. But people increasingly talked about how they were not as good as they used to be. And he would publicly say, hey, when I first started doing this, no one knew the kind of character he was. And now people started guessing the endings and stuff. Because once you've written 60 short stories, it's sort of hard to keep thinking of twists.
Yeah.
Arthur Conan Doyle died on July 7th, 1930. He was holding a flower at the time.
What kind of flower? Come on,
Dave. I'm afraid I don't know.
Sunflower.
So yeah, let's go with sunflower. He collapsed in his garden, clutching his heart with one hand and holding a flower in the other. His last words to her were his wife. He whispered to her, "You are wonderful." It's a great final line.
That is a lovely last line. It's
bloody, bloody nice.
All right, now I'm back on board. He's great.
And this is how I came onto the topic, and I can't confirm nor deny this, but I remember my family went to England when I was about 11. Did you do this also, Jess? Because we apparently go on the same holidays.
No, I had to wait until I was 23 and purchased my own ticket. So.
Oh, there you go. No, well, I was very fortunate enough to have a family holiday paid for by my mum's uncle died and left money, and he always loved travel, and he left money saying...
Go travelling.
Spend this on travel.
Oh, that's lovely. Great. Yeah, that's nice.
And we went to... we saw where Arthur Conan Doyle, pardon me, he was confused with Sherlock Holmes throughout his whole life, and that pissed him off to a great extent. And we saw the grave where Conan Doyle was buried, and which is very exciting for my mum, who's a big mystery fan, and her father, also a big, big mystery fan. But at the time, I remember there was a tour guide, and they told us that there's this big rumour that because of his spiritualism, he was actually buried vertically, standing up. Rather than lying down. But I couldn't find anywhere. There's rumours online, but I couldn't find anywhere that confirmed nor denied that.
That's so weird.
So what does
weird?
That do for your...
It's just better feng shui. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe you'll come back to life or something. I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah, I just always remember. I remember that, and I always thought that was quite strange. And that's sort of what got me onto the topic, because I remember that he went a little bit crazy later in life. So I just wanted to research that. And we come to the end of the show with some... fun facts.
Oh, yay! You don't always do fun facts.
I know, this but there's a few here. First of all, we'll do some Doyle fun facts and then some Sherlock Holmes fun facts.
Great.
The ones about Arthur Conan Doyle was that he was very into sport as well as his adventuring. So we have some sporting fun facts about Arthur Conan Doyle.
Ooh.
Because he was a sporting pioneer. He was first as a motorist. I reported before that he bought a car before he could even drive. And that rally I talked about before, in 1911, he went on the Prince Henry Tour, an international road competition organised by then Prince Henry of Prussia to pit English cars against German ones. So there you go. He entered a rally before he could even drive. Conan Doyle was also on a famous cricket team with some other famous people. Peter Pan writer J.M. Barrie was on the cricket team. Winnie the Pooh creator A.A. Milne on the team. So he also took a first-class wicket as a bowler, and the scalp of none other than, which is a very famous cricketer, W.G. Grace.
Oh.
Yes, I know W.G. Grace.
Yeah, so he took him...
Legendary cricketer.
He bowled him out in a first-class match.
That's
so
ridiculous.
So he's really good. Under the pseudonym A.C. Smith, the writer played as a goalkeeper for an amateur football side, Portsmouth Association Football Club, a precursor to the modern Portsmouth FC.
I've seen them play live.
There you go. So he was on a very early version of their team.
Really?
God, he's a busy guy.
He popularized skiing in Europe.
Okay. See, this is what people got done pre the internet. You know, so like they just did shit with their days.
Yeah, this is, this guy sounds like the most ridiculous bullshit person ever. I don't believe in him. He's not real.
He's more fictional than Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. He moved to Switzerland in 1893 for the
Did you say invented skiing?
No, he popularized it amongst. Okay.
He invented the moon.
No, so, I'm drawing a line there.
He moved to Switzerland in 1893. The mountain air was good for his wife, to his health.
Sure.
He mastered the basics of skiing with the help of some locals who had taken up to practicing the sport after dark to avoid being teased by the townsfolk who made fun of them. Doyle was the first Englishman to document the thrill of skiing. He wrote, "You let yourself go, getting as near to flying as any earthbound man can. In that glorious air, it is a delightful experience." Doyle correctly predicted that in the future, hundreds of Englishmen would come to Switzerland for the skiing season, which they now do.
Wow.
There you go. So
he
practically invented skiing amongst
Bloody
English people.
Hell.
All right, then we have Sherlock Holmes fun facts.
Yes.
We'll
see how many of them
the stats.
I know.
So there was four novels and 56. Yes, I am Sean Connery. Arthur Conan Doyle. He wrote four novels and 56 short stories starring Sherlock Holmes.
That's a lot.
These are the more fun facts. Sherlock Holmes Museum is actually on Baker Street in London, and it is officially listed as 221B Baker Street. So if you write it a letter, it will go there.
Oh.
But it is, in fact, 239 Baker Street.
Disappointing.
Because that's the building they could get. But then the mail people, because it's such a tourist attraction, changed the address.
Oh, that's
so if
cool.
you go there, it's 237, 221, 239. It's very, very confusing. But when Doyle chose the address, 221 didn't even exist at the time. So he created it as a fictional address. Cool. He just chose a number out of thin air. But
imagine if it was just 221 Baker Street. It really needs the B.
The B sounds cool, doesn't it? 221B. Even though that obviously means it's like, a sublet.
Yeah. And yeah. It is. They've got Mrs. Hudson downstairs and she's delightful.
That is true. Sherlock Holmes is never described as wearing a deerstalker hat, even though you all know him as a deerstalker. He was described as wearing a hat, but he's pictured in official illustrations that would go in the magazines and stuff with the deerstalker, so that's where that image came from.
Pipe. Mm-hmm.
But speaking of the images, Sidney Paget drew most of the illustrations of Holmes that accompanied the short stories that Holmes appeared in. So it would go on the magazine, they'd have a picture of him. But Sidney got the job by chance. Doyle sent a letter to his brother Walter, who was also an artist, asking him to do the illustrations. Sidney opened the letter by mistake, but still took the commission.
Nice.
And to make things worse, he based his illustrations on his brother Walter.
Oh, brutal.
So he stole his job, then drew his brother.
Not nice.
Holmes often said in the books, "Elementary" and "My Dear Watson," but never "Elementary," "My Dear Watson" together.
Ah.
There you go. Sherlock Holmes used fingerprints to identify an assailant before any real police force in the world did.
Oh, that's cool. Apparently not. Look at Matt's face. Not impressed that's cool? at all.
It's very cool.
He practically invented fingerprints, man.
No, that's very cool. All the kids are doing it now.
Guinness World Records lists Sherlock Holmes as the most portrayed movie character in history.
I thought for a second he said most betrayed. And I was like, well, okay.
Oh.
Portrayed.
Portrayed.
Do enunciate.
As of 2012, Sherlock Holmes has appeared in 254 films.
Wow.
I'm going to read a list to round things off of people that have played Sherlock Holmes. And it's quite the list. Obviously, we have Charlie Sheen Jr.
Yes.
Also known as Robert Downey Jr.
We have
who
Robert
also
Downey
played
Jr.
Charlie Chaplin.
He did too. Mm. There you go.
That is true. Benedict Cumberbatch, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Ian McKellen's had a go.
Of course he has. He'd be great.
Michael Caine has had a go.
Oh,
can you
no,
imagine Michael
I don't know how I feel about that.
Hello.
A Lamborghini, then.
Elementary, my dear Watson. You're only meant to blow the bloody doors off.
Michael Caine.
Quotes from his other movies. All right, Batman.
All right, Master Wayne.
Master Wayne.
Also having a go, imagine these people. We've got Christopher Lee.
Oh.
Very good. Roger Moore.
Oh, so we've, okay, yep.
John Cleese.
Oh, no.
Really?
Doctor Who's Tom Baker, Christopher Plummer,
Baker Street,
comedian David Mitchell, Australian
David
Richard
Mitchell.
Yeah, David Mitchell was in
He'd
a sketch.
He'd be a pretty good one.
Still counts.
Same with John Cleese then. Or was he on stage?
He was in like a mini movie thing. Yeah,
mini movie.
Australian Richard Roxburgh.
Oh yeah, he'd be good.
Peter
Rake. You guys watch Rake?
Yeah, the Rake guy. That's
fucking
right.
I love Rake. Fucking love it.
He was a great Sherlock. Peter O'Toole. Mm-hmm. Peter Cook, the very famous comedian.
Oh, wow.
Orson Welles.
Jesus.
And my favourite, and I thought most surprising, Leonard Nimoy.
Was it in space? Sherlock
yeah,
in space.
It was called Sherlock in space. I find that very amazing to imagine, Leonard Nimoy. So that is the end of my episode on Arthur Conan Doyle. Raconteur, adventurer, skier, spiritualist, writer, philanderer, possibly.
I-Man. Did you say that?
I-Man, of course.
Mm-hmm. His most famous role.
Iron Man, obviously, also played by Charlie Sheen Jr.
It all comes together.
It all comes together.
So there you go. That is him and Sherlock Holmes.
That was great, Dave.
Real good, as always, because you do the best ones, even though you're not the best person.
Well, thank you very much. I hope that was okay. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Sherlock Holmes. Is just cool.
Yeah,
it's just a cool.
Well, I'm gonna have to. Is it gonna be too much of a commitment for me to start watching the TV show?
No, not at all. It's amazing.
No, because there's not that many of them. I mean, they're long.
They're like movie length episodes, but there's only three episodes a season.
Oh, okay. I could do that. How many seasons?
Three.
Ah.
Three?
Sweet.
Three, I think, and three. Also that extra movie that I haven't seen that they did.
I haven't seen
at
that either.
They released
it
at
the fourth. But yeah,
at the cinema.
Brilliant.
Right.
Yeah, it's really great.
And Martin Freeman is an excellent Watson. I really like him as Watson. And like there's times where somebody calls Sherlock a psychopath and he's like high-functioning sociopath because that's what he is. He crazy.
He crazy, but he cool. He cool
he
crazy.
He crazy, but cool.
Man, he's so, so cool. Awesome. Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. If you did enjoy the show, we haven't said this in a while, but if you want to review us on iTunes, that helps us get up in the rankings so more people can discover us.
Man, there's been some fucking funny reviews.
Oh, and also it makes us smile when there's some hilarity that goes into the reviews.
There's some really funny ones. Appreciate that, all the 5-star ones especially.
Yeah, we appreciate the 5-stars more than the 2-star one.
Yeah, that probably went without saying.
Yeah, if you're going to give us a 2-star, fuck off.
What if you just...
How have you come this far? You've listened to an hour of us talk.
Yeah, just fuck right off.
Just furious the whole way through.
Oh, God. When I get to the end of this hour, I'm going to give this 2 stars.
Just don't. Just fuck off. I really can't reiterate that enough.
She can't.
We don't want you. Fuck off.
Great. I feel like antagonizing someone who's already prepared to give you 2 stars probably just results in a 1-star
review.
Then.
Give us one then, you shithead. I don't care.
I do care.
I don't.
I care.
I don't care. Nah,
how
I do.
Do you feel,
I'm delightful.
I'm somewhere between the two of you.
You care a bit?
Care a bit.
All right. Cool.
I'm playing it cool.
You are cool. But you can also get in contact with us via Facebook. People have been started messaging the page, which is cool. Do go on. You can also email us, dogoonpod@gmail.com. And you can get on Twitter and tweet about, or at the show, @dogoonpod. You can make some suggestions for us what we're going to talk about.
We genuinely enjoy hearing from you guys.
Yeah, it's cool. It's real cool. We've been out and about during the Comedy Festival. I've met a couple of people just on the street flyering. That was very nice. Very nice. But, yeah. Don't miss out. We'll be back next week with an episode from you, Matthew. I hope you got your topic ready to go.
Yeah, well, I've only got a week. I'll figure it out.
You work it all out. Well, we'll see you then, and goodbye.
I'm going into the hat. That's where I'm getting it.
Oh, yeah.
Are you going to go into the hat?
I'm going into the hat. Laters.
Laters, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.